Welcome to Truth Without Radio. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. And it's Friday night, it's the 24th of July, 2020, and we're live tonight because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic victory of World War II, and the newly released Churchill's Body Count, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello, sir. How are you doing?
Interesting, this week, actually. Answered a comment on the body count, and a note came up saying, "Make sure to have yet to review this." And now we did show the light of day.
There's still problems with uploading to BitChute.
And uploading problems. I mean, 3-4 days I waited, nothing happened. So I had to re-upload a fresh version. Well, same version, but you know. Fresh upload.
And we should be helping BitChute out because it does seem they're going after them. The independent newspaper just released an attack job on them. And they did actually give the guy who runs it a chance to respond. And he said, well, we're a small platform and we don't want illegal content on there. And they need people's help to find the illegal content. So if any of our listeners see anything that has stuff by ISIS or by National Action, anything that's terrorist propaganda, they need to flag it up and help out the guys that run BitChute, because we don't want to lose that platform. So help them out. If you see any illegal stuff, do flag it and help them in that way. But also, we've got some good news, Dennis, haven't we? We've got a URL for you. A much easier URL that someone helpfully dropped in the comments.
I wonder what you meant there, probably. Yeah, we have. You probably know better than I do.
It's bitchute.com/truthwillout/. Very easy to remember. bitchute.com/truthwillout/. And that will take you to Dennis's page, where you will be able to see the first two episodes of the new documentary, Churchill's Body Count.
Yeah, I've also started playing with a DVD, you know, the music of The Greatest Story Never Told, showing the clips of the footage with it, which went with it in the original, just to sort of a couple of minutes on each tune, right? But hopefully at some stage I'll upload that.
Yeah, you used to have a music DVD, didn't you, or a music CD?
What we called a... something like The Greatest Album Never Sold, because we didn't sell it, you know, people could download it. But I thought this time just make a bit of a DVD on it. If people wanted to put it together, they could download it, you know.
I think people associate the music from Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, they associate it with that more than the original movies that it came from.
Yeah, funny enough, that's where it come from, because I went on YouTube this week, and so I always have a quick search, see if it's knocking about, which never is, ever. Maybe one episode, but I did notice that the music is still up there. And when you go into the comments, fascinating comments, you know what I mean? They still remember the video where it out.
I think Amalek did a synthwave version of some of it, didn't he? I seem to remember. A very good synthwave version of the theme tune to it. I'll have to look it up, see if I've still got it somewhere. I'm sure it's on his page, on his SoundCloud page. What else have you been up to this week then, Dennis? You've just been struggling to get this episode uploaded, have you? Or have you been working on number three?
Well, I was struggling. I just left it for a couple of days and kept checking in and it weren't up. Or I just uploaded again and we're up in about 20 minutes this time. I'm trying to think. I haven't had much time to do one or two other things that I've been intending to do. I've got some more material from that wonderful Spanish lady who keeps in touch with me every now and again. And actually, she sent me a video which was 45 ways to use to take communism, you know, to take America down, which you nearly have at the moment.
Sounds good. That's like the 10 ways that we're looking at today.
Yeah, the, other that, Masonic. Yeah, it's a good video. I might even upload it on its own.
And Captain R has just dropped that URL in the chat room for us, so that's that's helpful. Well, tonight we're going to get into the second part of the Masonic Corruption of America that we began last week, based on Scarlet and the Beast. And did I miss last week? I had last week off, did I? Or was that before? That was the week before. I've been away all week. This is only my
your clone.
Yeah, this is only my second podcast of the week. Well, it's the first day that I've actually been back. So I do apologize if I'm sounding a little bit rusty. I've been nowhere near a microphone for the last 6 days. It's rather like sort of being away from work and getting back and then not knowing how everything works. Yes, we were quoting from Scarlet and the Beast, A History of the War Between English and French Freemasonry, last week, the book by John Daniel, and we were particularly looking at the Masonic corruption of America. And we started off looking at how the Supreme Court was stacked with Freemasons, and then how the First Amendment, because the Supreme Court was stacked with Freemasons, they changed the First Amendment, which actually says Congress shall make no law restricting the free exercise of religion. Not there should be a separation of church and state. And the mainstream media promoted this idea that it meant that the church and state would be separated, and the Supreme Court decided that it was going to interpret that law as if it meant separation of church and state. So we had the mainstream media and we had the Supreme Court working together to deceive the people. And then from that, religious education was then outlawed in the classroom. And instead, we had the promotion of Masonic ideals, such as the balance between good and evil, as if they're both equal to one another, and as if evil is necessary, a necessary thing, which, of course, it isn't. We should seek to get rid of evil wherever we find it. And then we talked about a new morality that was being taught, which was basically paving the way for the legalization of obscenity and the legalization of pornography. And they did that by deciding on a new test for obscenity. And this is the same Supreme Court that's full of the Freemasons. And they decided that the new test for obscenity would be whether, to the average person applying contemporary community standards, the dominant theme of the material taken as a whole appeals to prurient interests. And that permitted such publications as Playboy and Penthouse to display pornographic nudity in their magazines, along with articles on politics, the arts, economics, etc., by recognised experts in their respective fields. So long as they included something else in there, along with the pornography, it was decided it wasn't pornography. And then gradually through more and more of that, that eroded the society's morals, so that the contemporary community standards, so they lowered. So each year, more and more pornography was allowed because the community
accepted it as normal.
Yeah, and eventually we got to the stage that we're at today, and it was all set up by this Masonically stacked court. And that's about as far as we got last week. Do you want to add anything else to that, Dennis? Do you remember anything else that we were talking about last week?
Well, no, just that we were going to go deeper into pornography and the other subjects. And what was the other subject we're on about? My mind goes blank, as usual.
We got abortion and child sacrifice a little bit.
Child sacrifice was the main one, yeah. But, yeah, abortion is the same thing to me.
Well, before we get to that, we had the pornography. You see, the end result of the pornography was and also the degrading of the morals and the promotion of sex before marriage. The end result of that was lots of unwanted children, lots of unwanted pregnancies, because you can't divorce sex from what it was intended for, which was to create children. It wasn't intended just to be used for people to get their kicks from it, to get short-term pleasure. It was intended that was going to create a life. So lots of new lives were being created through this destruction of the morality. And of course, these mothers didn't want them. So that's how we get to abortion. But we're leaping ahead a little bit there, because we've got this pornography thing, which also distracted everybody. Because once you see pornography, you're distracted by it, and people would become addicted to it. And
can I just say,
go on.
If you were to dissect a feminist's head or brain with everything that she's been fed over this past 50 years. There'll be some garbage coming out, I can really assure you. People wouldn't believe at a certain time, a number of years ago, that it would even be possible for somebody to think like they do. I'm convinced. To kill your own child is one of them.
Well, that's incredible. But just the idea of pornography, I'm sure the feminists probably didn't like that. I mean, they used to say that it was degrading to women, but I think it's more degrading to men. It's men whose minds become addicted to it, who become distracted, who can't control their emotions when they see it because of our testosterone. We can be manipulated by it.
Yep.
And I think the feminists were against it at first. Don't objectify women. But if you fast forward to today, I mean, that attraction to women is used all the time to manipulate men.
Yeah, they probably got wise to it, haven't they? They probably didn't realise what it were at first, but now they've clicked, haven't they?
They've clicked to the fact that they're the ones that are in control with it, basically.
Yeah.
And also you get the unwanted side effects of it. You get a much higher incidences of rape as well, which has harmed them. I mean, feminism has just basically harmed women. They're not happy now. They used to look a lot happier.
Without a doubt.
If you want to see a happy woman, look at a grandmother with her grandchildren. That's a happy woman. And then think the majority of these feminists today, they haven't even had children by the time they're in their 30s.
Yeah, it's not a natural existence, that's the problem, but, you know, they insist on it.
So this pornography was used to weaken us, and as E. Michael Jones has pointed out, it's used as a weapon. It was used as a weapon in the Israeli-Lebanese war, where the Israelis took over the TV channels and they started beaming this pornography into people's homes, into the Lebanese homes, so they weren't able to fight back. Their men were, what is this? Totally distracted by it. And we've seen the same with this COVID thing, didn't we? We saw Pornhub, didn't they? They gave out free pornography subscriptions to the Italians to keep them in at home so that they didn't break the COVID quarantine.
Yeah,
and we're told it's free speech. This is how they got it. Again, this is how they got it past the Supreme Court. They said that this was free speech. How can you say that is free speech, and yet it's not free speech to criticise the 1% that are the elite, the 1% with all the money?
No, or the 0.2% of the transgenders.
Yes. Well, we've got some quotes here as well about pornography. This is from Lasha Darkmoon's Pornography is a Secret Weapon. She says, pornography is deployed today as a psyop or a mind weapon to pacify, control, brutalize, and ultimately enslave the masses. That's because if the men are all distracted and they're thinking about women all the time, they're not thinking about what's being done to them and what's being done to us, and it interferes with the male instinct to protect and to provide for, and instead we're distracted by thoughts of women all the time, because that overrides the desire to protect and provide for. So that's what it's used for. That's how it enslaves the masses.
Plus, what else it does is, once you see porn, you start to believe it's a normal activity. And so then wives will be pressured into doing certain activities, which, if they're not, you know, happy with, can cause even more problems with the marriage.
And once you've seen something like that, you can't unsee it. You think how damaging that is to youngsters to see. I think it was damaging when I first saw it.
I mean,
hardcore pornography, I don't think I saw that until I was about 14, 15. And that's damaging enough for youngsters to see it at that age and learning that sort of stuff. And you think that this is all just available on the internet, and kids are taught to use tablets and smartphones. You see toddlers with smartphones in their hands.
You do, yeah.
And you just think, how dangerous is that? How little do we think of our children that we allow this stuff to proliferate in the way that it does, and say, oh, well, it's free speech. Adults have the right you know, people shouldn't have the, if it's going to harm the majority, then the individual shouldn't really have the right to do it. If it's going to harm, if it's going to harm the group, because we all need the group to survive. Everything we have comes from the group that we are born into. So to harm that group,
to the individual, and like if you're thinking as an individual, you're not thinking as strong as you would in a group.
And again, that's why they've attacked our identity, isn't it? So that we don't think, so that we don't think as a group. We're encouraged to think as individuals. But no man is an island. And we've got a quote from the Italian Freemason Giuseppe Mazzini, and he says, "We corrupt in order to rule." So that confirms it. You need to corrupt the people first before you can rule over them. The kings of old, they didn't just defend against the foreign enemies, but they also defended our morals. They would have never allowed things like that to happen, to proliferate, because they knew that it would demoralize the people and pacify them. And continuing with Lasha Darkmoon, she says, "How do you take a nation of free and independent citizens and turn them into slaves? How do you do this slowly and imperceptibly without violence and with the willing participation of the slaves to be? The answer is simple. You corrupt them, you undermine them, deprave them, demoralize them until they have acquired all the characteristics of slaves." And men are slaves to their sex drive.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, too many really think between the legs rather than with the brain.
Well, they do, don't they? They say a standing, whatever you want to call it, has no conscience. And that's, you know...
That we could mention as well is the fact that it will affect certain men differently. You know, when you get these, like, we had a spate of... When it all came out during the 70s, we had a spate of murders like Son of Salmon, who were known to watch pornography. It's messed up the mind completely.
Yeah, a lot of the serial killers.
Yeah,
it turned out that was the first thing that really messed them up was seeing pornography, and a lot of them had pornography addictions. Can't think of exact names of them. But then once you've enslaved the population, then you can manipulate them. So we're manipulated by the corporations that use it in the advertising, and then the women themselves are now using it to manipulate men, and they've got such a high opinion of themselves, and they think that, you know, they've got this pussy power or whatever, and you know, they can use that to manipulate men, and that's raised up, and you know, that's encouraged, and that's seen as a good thing. But all it means is that they'll end up getting old and they'll be childless, when once their looks have gone, nobody will be interested in marrying them, and they'll be very miserable. And they'll realize later on that last week
I've seen many good looking left wingers.
Right, they'll realize later on that they've wasted the best years of their life working for someone when they could have spent that time being loved by a family, by being loved and needed by children, and having a loving husband that provides for them. And instead they'll have money. And they'll have a cat.
I think the worst ones are the politicians, to be honest.
Well, they're a good example of it.
They just talk ridiculous amount of times.
They're a good example of it, Dennis. Theresa May, Merkel, childless. Childless.
Yeah, that's crankies up in Scotland.
They've got nothing to actually embed them in the people. Nothing. They haven't actually got any investment in the future. They haven't got children that are going to live through the world that they have created. They're just working for the economy and just trying to make money and trying to do something for themselves rather than doing something for the next generation, because they don't have their own investment in the next generation. So that they're perfect people to put in charge. With the system that we have, obviously not the best people to be put in charge of a nation of flesh and blood people, but for the system that we have, this system that wants to enslave people and wants to put the worst people in authority, then they're perfect, childless women. They're going to be aren't they?
The first mistake they make is when there's a dozen of it on the board and there's six men, they insist on six women instead of going for the six best applicants.
Well, that's all a part of it, isn't it? That's all a part of the degeneration of it. And with the pornography, I think it's encouraged women to compete with one another as well. And, you know, it's gone from wearing makeup to plastic surgery to
who can have the best body haircut.
Yeah, to being half naked. And again, this just distracts the men. And you've got women in the workplace. And again, it's going to distract the men. And the beta men are going to try and chat the women up. And that's going to be seen as harassment. And the alpha males will chat the women up, and they'll love that. That's not going to be seen as harassment. So it just creates all this confusion and unhappiness, and it's all based around giving in to desire instead of trying to avoid desire. Like the priests do, they try to avoid it. I can remember a while back there was one of these feminist activists, and she threw herself at this Russian priest with her breasts out, and this other man threw himself in the way to shield the priest's eyes, because, you know, he doesn't want to see it. He's kept away from a woman for years, and just the sight of that is going to, you know, stir thoughts and emotions in him that he's struggled to suppress for many, many years.
I'm not sure if you remember or not. I got a lot of comments at the time in Communism by the Back Door, and I did the section on the attack on the Argentinian church, which happened once a year, and the defendants would gather around, the men would gather around and protect the church from being damaged, and the feminists and the LBGT and everybody else, they were there just spitting in the faces, and women were getting in the bus there and feeling each other up in front of these obviously Christian men. And when I showed that, people were just flabbergasted, absolutely flabbergasted.
And they used it to attack the church as well. In E. Michael Jones' book, Libido Dominandi, he talks about how they used this and how they discovered that if they could encourage people to masturbate, then they wouldn't think about God. And it would draw them away from God, and they took whole convents away from God by bringing in these feminist psychotherapist types that would teach them all this sort of stuff, and the convents would turn into lesbians, and they would reject God. It was Wilhelm Reich that worked that one out. That the more people masturbate, the further they get from God. So they encouraged this to help split people off from divinity. And from their traditions and from their history, and just to think about pleasures. But of course, after that, then comes the horrors. Then comes the pregnancy, the unwanted pregnancy, and the abortion. And he shows that the same thing happened in the movies. After the pornography came the horror movies, which was the flip side of it.
Yeah, and the psychological effect is never really discussed on women who have abortions. It's all not too long on YouTube. I think it was the second anniversary of her actually having an abortion, and she was given a live stream and just cut her up, even after 2 years.
I think it does for the rest of their lives. They're conned into thinking that they're not ready to have a child, and they can always have one later on in life once they've got their career, and they kid themselves that they wouldn't be able to bring the child up, and it's in the child's best interests. And then once it's done, and they've got to live with that for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And the shame is that more of them don't speak up about it.
But once
they've made a decision, it's like, you know, they've got to stick with that decision, I suppose, even though they know deep down it was the wrong one.
Maybe from husbands as well, or the fellas. You know, they may not really want to do it, but they're forced into it, so that's even worse.
Yeah, I think the fathers, a lot of the time, they don't know about it. They're not told until after it's done.
There's cases for that as well.
Well, continuing on from number six, which is where we got up to last week, on the heels of legalised pornography came human and civil rights legislation, which then gave rise to the much publicised right to privacy, which is not a legislated right, but an interpretation of civil rights. So I guess what they're talking about there is the right to two men to do whatever they want within their own home. even though what they're doing is against the moral law and is harmful to society, they're saying, well, when you're in your own home, you're not a part of society, so that's okay. So that was the first, well, not the first, but that was one of the steps to get into where we are now.
But I don't know. I always remember Michael Jones saying that it's not anti-Semitic to say that the Jews forced through men getting married, because Joe Biden owned up to it, saying that the Jews were responsible, which they weren't happy about, I believe, but he was praising them. And so, yeah, they're responsible for the marriage of men.
There are so many times that they've actually boasted about it that they're on record as to how that happened. Because when you think about it, homosexuals make up, what, 1%, 2% of the population? They don't make up that much of the population. And the people that were lobbying for that, were the big corporations and the big companies that were putting the money into it. And the reason why they were doing it wasn't because of some great concern for homosexuals. It was because it would subvert society, would corrupt society, weaken society, and encourage people to spend more. Where they don't have an identity. People try to purchase their identity now with the music they like, or the football teams they like, or the fashion that they like. It all ties in together. Meanwhile, the new morality taught in public schools began to take hold. Free and open sex, now so much flaunted in both the heterosexual and homosexual community, became the order of the day, and the number of unwed mothers began to climb. I even think this idea of dating and going out with lots of people, I mean, that encourages sex before marriage. I think people used to go to dances. They would go to a dance where there would be boys and girls at the dance, and there would be like older people there or whatever, and you would meet people, and that would be about it. You wouldn't really go on dates, and the men would be looking for future wives, and the women would be looking for future husbands. And you would meet somebody, and I mean, men very much fall in love very, very, very easily. And they would see a woman, and that would be it. They would fall for them. And the woman would be caught up in the romance of the occasion. And you would often see people that would be married within 6 months of meeting. They would meet, and they'd be engaged in 6 weeks, and then married, and they'd be together for the rest of their lives.
Just quick sex on the internet, innit? Just a meeting and move on to the next one.
Yeah, well, even with arranged marriage, I think that was better, because people would then grow. They would then grow to love one another. The fact we had,
that's a fair comment.
The fact that we had arranged marriage shows that people don't have to fall in love and then get married. In actual fact, the arranged marriages were more likely to last than the marriages where people fall in love and then get married, because most of the time the people that fall in love and then get married, they've fallen in love quite a few times before they get married, and they may have slept with quite a few different people before they get married. And the more partners you've had before you get married, the much higher the chance is that you're going to have a divorce, and that marriage isn't going to last, because you're supposed to be with one person.
It's difficult to have a divorce these days.
Yeah. Well, and men don't want to get married because of how quick and easy it is to get divorced nowadays.
You sign these agreements. If you do get married, you don't get this, you don't get that. It makes all comfortable living, doesn't it?
And as well as the high number of abortions, then we started seeing a high number of unmarried mothers. So the children didn't have a father. Didn't have a father there. Didn't have the father figure there. So they're starting out with half of what they should have missing, and they haven't got the solid foundations that are really needed for people to reach their full potential. And it's a cycle that repeats itself. If you come from a broken home, the chances are much higher that your marriage is going to break down. And these kids that come from broken homes, that's the last thing they want, is for the marriage to break down, because they know the pain that it caused them. They really don't want it to happen, but they just can't help it happening, because that's what they saw happen to them when they were a child. That's why it was so important that, we didn't allow this quick and easy divorce, and that we didn't.
And this is what Black Lives Matter stands for, the organization.
They want to take
the marriage off.
Yeah, they want to destroy the family, destroy the patriarchy. And all of this ties in with the Frankfurt School and ways to avoid fascism arising again. The patriarchy, the way that they see it, they saw that fascism came from the family unit with the father as the authoritarian figure. So you need to get rid of the father, therefore. Children won't see an authoritarian figure, therefore fascism won't rise again. That was the logic. That was the logic, and you know that's what they're pushing, and we can see that this ties in with this promotion of debauchery.
One more thing we forgot to add into the mix of all this, and that's of course the drugs.
Yeah, this is all about the same time in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite sure they could get rid of drugs if they really wanted to. But like Craze found out in London, there's only really one firm in this country. And it's the same in America. The Clintons have been caught, the Bushes have been caught bringing drugs into the country. They may have killed people like Escobar, but it's only because they want to rule the roost.
Well, they're involved in it, aren't they? The CIA are involved in the cocaine and the heroin smuggling. The Taliban got rid of all the heroin in Afghanistan. And then once the CIA went in there with the war on terror, it became the centre of it.
All the drugs are there, so they have to find somewhere else.
But on the one hand, they make it illegal. And then on the other hand, you've got all these pop stars promoting it.
Well, they make money on both hands then, don't they? One's a fine or whatever for taking the drugs, and the other one is selling it anyway.
And you got the alternative, well, not the alternative media, but the mainstream media that promote it as being artistic, and that's the way to rebel. I mean, that's one way that he's really pushed, is that to try and get, because all teenagers are rebellious, and they'll suggest that to express that rebellious streak, they should start smoking dope or taking acid or taking ecstasy. Yeah. And then their lives become revolving around that. And again, instead of
get kicked out and all this kind of carry on.
Yeah, instead of remembering their innocence before adolescence and then fighting against the corruption of innocence, they end up going down the road of drug taking.
Oh, I've seen it.
And sex, drugs, and rock and roll all ties in together. So you see the number of unwed mothers beginning to climb, and the seventh and the eighth steps to destroy Christian America were taken when the Masonic-dominated Supreme Court took action against parents' authority over their own children. Fisher informs us that the Supreme Court's approval of distributing contraceptives to children without parental consent and authorizing them to have abortions without the same consent parallels Masonic thought. And again, Justice Brennan was one of the chief architects of the Roe versus Wade abortion decision in 1973. And just before we get into the abortion side of it, what about contraception? I mean, nowadays it just seems, you know, it doesn't seem that important. Contraception is available. Girls, if they're going to, you know, if they're going to start sleeping around at a young age, then you don't want them to get pregnant, so they get contraception. But just the fact that it was all available to them encouraged these kids to start sleeping around, the same as sex education does. And essentially, it's preventing nature from doing what nature should be doing. Contraception is not—it's not a good thing.
Well, that's what they've always done, haven't they? They've always tried to change nature. I've always said it's going to come back on them.
And look at the birth rates now. It needs to be 2.3, and it's 1.7, 1.6.
Yeah.
No, we're not reproducing enough to replace ourselves. Following this legislation came the often repeated Masonic phrases women's rights and pro-choice. Again, these are not legislated rights, but rights relentlessly publicised and promoted by the media elite of our country. A quote from Citizen, October the 15th, 1990, a magazine published by James Dobson's Focus on the Family, addresses the media promotion of the Masonic anti-family agenda. And this is the quote. Most major newspapers support abortion rights on their editorial pages, and reporters are decidedly pro-abortion. A 1985 Los Angeles Times poll found that 82% of journalists on newspapers of all sizes say they favor abortion rights. some reporters participated in a big abortion rights march in Washington in 1989. The nation's largest newspaper chains give money to pro-abortion groups, and journalists tend to regard opponents of abortion as religious fanatics and bug-eyed zealots. So we see the same thing there, don't we? We see the mainstream media going along with the Supreme Court and with the Masonic, with these Masonic ideas that it's a woman's right to kill her child, and that's being pro-choice.
Well, I think there was a bit of a celebration when they got Ireland, because that's kind of the end of the Irish big families. Not that they were in the amount that they used to be, but you know, once over Irish families would have 6, 7, 8 children. But now with abortion being passed and the propaganda, even the church were marching with these pro-abortion people. Scandalous, really. It's, but sad as well.
It's scandalous that they talk about it as if it's a real positive thing, and it shouldn't really be the business of anybody else but Ireland. And yet you've got... you know, you've got people in the British government talking about how Ireland has finally come into the 21st century and finally given rights to women, and it's just they're killing their children. And what they've snuck it into Northern Ireland as well, didn't they? Because Northern Ireland wasn't able to form a government. Westminster forced it on them, and forced this law on them that they should allow abortion. And the Washington Post guidelines for combating the pro-lifers apparently insist that they be called anti-abortionists and by strong implication suppressors of women's rights. And conversely, the pro-abortionist movement was to be titled abortion rights advocates or promoters of women's rights. These terms, these terms, the one negative for those who oppose murder and the other positive for those who relish the slaughter of unborn children, are sanitary words which conceal reality, selective child sacrifice for selfishness and population control. In reality, abortion becomes a scientific culling of the human herd.
Right.
I mean, they will even talk about it as equality. If we want women's equality, we have to allow women to murder their children because men don't get pregnant. And women
a substantial amount of them in America will be black, and then they're walking around the street saying Black Lives Matter.
more black lives are taken through abortion than anything else.
Probably Chicago.
This term they say here, selective child sacrifice for selfishness, and that is exactly what it is. These women that go for these abortions, they do it because they want to have a career. Or they don't think that the person that got them pregnant, they don't want them as a husband. They want a better husband.
They certainly wind me up when they have the T-shirts, you know, I've had an abortion.
Or then they think that it's going to cramp their style. But all of these things, that they're in effect killing the child because they think it's going to improve their life in some way, like a better career, better chance of a husband. It's not going to make them fat. They think it's going to improve their life. So how is that any different from the child sacrifice from thousands of years ago, when they would literally sacrifice a child because they hoped that it would then improve their life, that it would then make them more prosperous, their business would work out, that they would be more likely to have luck in the business that they were doing? It's exactly the same same goal.
Yeah.
The same goal that they're going for. It's just that nowadays the child is killed in the womb.
Instead of once they're born. As well.
The priesthood in ancient mystery religions used the exact same scientific excuse, making child sacrifice a religious rite. Ancient practices parallel Masonic thought today, which is deliberately designed to soothe the consciences of those who officiate in the ceremony of the now legal child sacrifices. Most revealing is the fact that many who work in abortion clinics are Satan worshippers themselves, who by the act of killing the unborn are knowingly and willingly performing human sacrifice to their demon god. This fact is confirmed by Carol Everett, a former owner of several Dallas, Texas abortion clinics. Wendell Amstutz, in Exposing and Confronting Satan and Associates, quotes her as saying, "A tremendous number of occultists work at the clinics. There is a definite link between abortion mills and the occult. people involved in abortion are involved in demonic activity. Close quote. E. Michael Jones talks about that in last month's Culture Wars as well, in the abortion clinics in Ireland, and the people that are involved in them. They're pagans and occultists, and they worship the goddess, and they see the killing of these children in this way, that it's a sacrifice to the goddess, so that the women who have killed that child are going to get some improvement in their life. And they do look at it that way.
I had a video taken down off YouTube, which had a hidden camera. Somebody went in and they're asking questions about abortion, what happens, like, if it's, you know, it's still alive at the end, and, you know, the woman behind the character said, oh, don't worry, where's the meats? And YouTube actually took it down.
Well, that's the changing of terminology, isn't it? They'll call it a fetus instead of a baby.
Well, not necessarily, because they can do that now, because they're aborted at 9 months, aren't they? Surely.
Oh, they'll still call it a fetus. They'll call it a termination instead of a killing.
Yeah, all these fancy words they use.
Women's rights. You try and make it sound so positive. All it is child sacrifice. Wikipedia says about child sacrifice. Child sacrifice is the ritualistic killing of children in order to please or appease a deity, a supernatural being, or a sacred social order. So to appease a sacred social order. What have we got today? What is our social order today? It's feminism, equality, diversity. Women are the same as men. Women need to have abortion because men can't have children. So to make the social order right, women need to have abortions. That is exactly what Wikipedia says child sacrifice is. The ritualistic killing of children in order to please a sacred social order. So you could say that it's not ritualistic. Or maybe it is.
Well, it could, but I seem to think it is.
Yeah, you wonder if they're sort of saying, I expect in some cases it is with these occult abortionists that do this. Maybe yeah. It's ritualistic. There is a similarity when they harvest the body parts. I mean, the ritual.
Well, these are for vaccines, aren't they?
Yeah, well, ritual human sacrifice in the past. They would drain the blood. They would use bits of the body but they still do today in. You know, the more savage parts of the world, they will use body parts. And yet they do the same with these abortion mills. They use the body parts of the fetuses and they put them on the market, don't they? They use them for cosmetics and
all sorts. Vaccines.
It's also in order to please tribal, group or national loyalties in order to achieve a desired result. So it's the ritualistic killing of children out of national loyalties, group loyalties, in order to achieve a desired result. And the desired result today is so that they can have a career. Or so that they can wait until the time is right.
Yeah, well, that was one side of it. There's other sides as well, like why they like to sacrifice a child as well.
What are some of the other reasons?
Well, they like the adrenaline, which is created by a child in fear or in torture. Eventually, when he dies, they'll drain the child of blood with that adrenaline in it and sell it.
Oh, you mean the people actually doing the abortions? I think they
not the abortions so much as the occult practices.
Yeah, we will get into the occult practices a little bit later. We'll just stick with this. Wiki explanation of it here. So it says all of that is a form of human sacrifice. Child sacrifice is thought to be an extreme extension of the idea that the more important the object of sacrifice, the more devout the person giving it up is. It's almost like a mirror opposite of that with abortion, isn't it? They're saying this object of sacrifice, this object doesn't mean anything to me. It's just a clump of cells. That's why I don't.
Well, that's what they painted as, isn't it?
I've actually had someone say that to me before. It's just a clump of cells. Just couldn't believe it. The way people are.
It looks to me at the moment when I look around the world, it's like a spell's been cast again. I mean, I do believe a spell was cast after World War II, and I think another one's been cast again because they talk some right dribble.
When people perceive something is going to be a benefit to them, that, you know, they will kid themselves into believing anything to try and make that right because they think it's going to be a benefit to them. Do you know what I mean? They will come up with able to justify what they're doing. They'll self-justify it.
Because they say it's law, they think it's right, which that's not going to be the case.
Well, so many things today, you know, the law encourages and that we know are harmful: abortion, homosexuality, sex before marriage, divorce. All these things are harmful to, well, they're harmful to individuals, but they're also harmful to the nation as a whole.
Yeah.
Which means suicidal to the nation as a whole. A lot of the policies that we have.
Yeah, I'm sure the suicide rates are well up.
Now, all the examples that we have on Wikipedia of this child sacrifice are from non-white cultures, and particularly the Canaanites in the Old Testament. There is one that they come up with that we will get into that is in Crete, but I have heard reference to it in Greek myths as well. But yeah. it was particularly centered around the Canaanites in the Old Testament. But also we have the Aztecs, the Incas, the Mayans, the Mochi, the Temoto-Kwika. We have it in Africa, in South Africa, in Uganda at the moment. In the early 21st century, Uganda has experienced a revival of child sacrifice. In spite of government attempts to downplay the issue, an investigation by the BBC into human sacrifice in Uganda found that ritual killings of children are more common than the Ugandan authorities will admit. There are many indicators that politicians and politically connected wealthy businessmen are involved in sacrificing children in practice of traditional religion, which has become a commercial enterprise. And that's straight from Wikipedia. That's not, some right-wing extremist site. That's Wikipedia.
Have you seen well investigated?
They have investigated it. And we also get the albinos. They go after the albinos, don't they? And sacrifice them and cut body parts off from them. So it's still going on. And we have this reference as well in the Old Testament to the sacrifice of Isaac, Abraham's son Isaac, which gets misunderstood. And some people will use that as an example, and especially people who think that the Israelites were Jews, that they'll say, oh, the Jews were going to sacrifice Isaac and Yahweh asked them to sacrifice Isaac, therefore Yahweh approves of human sacrifice. But that isn't what was going on here, because God had made a promise, Yahweh had made a promise to Abraham that he would be the father of many, many nations, and that those nations would come through Isaac. And he'd already made this promise to him. So when Yahweh said, I want you to sacrifice Isaac to me on this altar, that was a test of Abraham's faith, whether he believed in God's promise that Isaac would live and be the father of many nations. So he went along with the setting up of the altar, got as far as getting the knife out or whatever, and then this sheep appeared, this lamb appeared in the thicket, and he was sacrificed instead. But because Isaac had actually been put on that altar, that meant that he was he was then owned by God, basically, because if you put something on the altar, it's blessed and that's dedicated to God. So Isaac himself was dedicated to God, and the lamb was sacrificed instead, which was like a mirror image of Christ later on being sacrificed on the cross. And Isaac was then, and everything within Isaac's loins were owned by God. That's why the Israelites were the holy people, because everything that came from Isaac's loins was owned by God, was special to God, had been dedicated to him on that altar. So you had a lot of things going on there. And at the same time, when that went on, the Egyptians apparently stopped doing human sacrifice, because this also showed that this is not what the Creator wanted. He did not want human sacrifice. So it also showed the people for definite that Yahweh, the Creator, was not a God of human sacrifice, because the other tribes around, you know, they knew of Yahweh. He wasn't their tribal God, but they knew of Yahweh in their pantheon of the gods as the Creator, I think. So just worth bringing that up. And as I say, it was the Canaanites that were the real ones that were into this human sacrifice, and we've got some information of those here. One child sacrificing cult stands out from all the rest, the cult of Moloch, the Canaanite god of child sacrifice. And this is the one that most people think of, the brass...
Yeah, the burnt offering.
Yeah, the brass bull that you see the pictures of with them throwing children into this brass bull. That was Moloch. The Canaanites were worshippers of Moloch. Moloch's name derives from the Hebrew word MLK, which usually stands for Melech or King. As this is vocalized as Molech in the Masoretic text, which is the Hebrew version of the Old Testament, the pronunciation has become its traditional name. The cult of Moloch, who is also called Molech, is said to have boiled children alive in the bowels of a big bronze statue with the body of a man and the head of a bull. Offerings, at least according to the Hebrew Bible, were to be reaped through either fire or war, and devotees can still be found today. The Masoretic text dates to the Middle Ages, but references to a Moloch appear in ancient Greek translations of old Judaic texts as well. The distinction dates back to the Second Temple period between 516 BC and 70 CE, when the Second Temple of Jerusalem stood prior to its destruction by the Romans. Moloch's anthropomorphized bull figure was typically pictured in rabbinic Judaic texts as a bronze statue internally heated by a fire, and it was inside this construct that priests or parents placed their children to be consumed by fire as a sacrificial offering. Ancient Greek and Roman authors wrote tales of this practice, with the earliest being stories of child sacrifices to Baal, which means master, Hammon in Carthage. He was their chief god, responsible for the weather and fertile agriculture. And we'll talk about what happened in Carthage as well, because this was also Moloch, also known as Baal Hammon. In the Bible, children were sacrificed in what is called a tophet by the Canaanites, which is a shrine reserved for child sacrifice, which took place outside of Jerusalem to Moloch's satisfaction. So this is one of the reasons why God was so angry at the Canaanites in the Old Testament, because they were doing this. They were doing this human sacrifice. And that was...
Yeah, all of the reasons it's making mad.
Yeah, all around this is what these tribes were doing around about the Israelites. And there were times when two of the kings of Judah did the same thing, which is, again, one of the reasons why they lost Israel and Judah, and they lost these countries, because they joined in this this child sacrificing. Carthage was the main center of it, and Carthage was originally it was built by the Phoenicians, because the Phoenician Empire were pre-runners of the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire. They were also started out as an Israelite empire. The Phoenicia itself was part of Israel and Judah's lands after they got rid of the Canaanites, but they didn't get rid of all the Canaanites. They allowed some of them to live, which is why we see later on in Carthage, in this city, we see that there is this practice of human sacrifice, because you've got Canaanites that have interbred with Israelites there. There's references to that in the Bible as well. Thy mother was an Ammonite and thy father was a Moabite, or something it says in the book of Jeremiah, which is pointing out that there'd been this interbreeding between the Canaanites with some of these tribes of Israel. And that's why they were doing this sick practice. Do you want to add anything to that before I start talking about Carthage, Dennis?
Well, the only recent times where I don't think it would be mentioned, it was the Dutch banker, or he certainly worked for the bankers, and he left the organisation, and he gave kind of an interview saying that at one stage he just had a fridge of a heart, no conscience, just cold as ice. And it's only because he had problems when he was a child, when he went to one of the Church of Satan. He was quite amused the first time when he saw these nude women walking around. But then one occasion, they asked him to join in on a child sacrifice, which kind of broke him. And once he'd been broken like that, he was a threat to himself, never mind them, because he couldn't be the fridge that he once was. And so he left. And I've seen a couple of talks of this since, and he seems genuine.
Well, this is one of the things with this, isn't it? I mean, this human sacrifice is what the pagans of the Bible, what they were doing. They were sacrificing humans. And then today you get this New Age thing, the witch thing, the pagan thing, and they're talking about, I don't know, reading runes or reading people's hands or going to stone circles as if that's what it's about. It was about human sacrifice. It was, yeah. You know, it was really, really depraved. And it can still lead to that to this day. I mean, you read Aleister Crowley's stuff and the Ordo Templi Orientis. We've got some quotes about that later on.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff is still going on. And then you can look at the allegations of Jewish ritual slaughter that went on in the Middle Ages and these children that would be abducted and they would turn up and they'd have had the blood drained from them. And there's a book called Blood Passover written by someone called Ariel Twaff, I believe, who's the son of the rabbi of Rome. And he got his university class. He was at university, I think, in Tel Aviv. He got his university class to investigate these allegations of Jewish ritual slaughter in the Middle Ages. And they went right through all the source documents. And his conclusion at the end of it was that this went on. It was not a libel. It may have been a libel in some cases. It may have been that people made these accusations against the Jews falsely. But in many cases, these were genuine cases. And there were confessions and there was evidence. And certain Jews, that he theorized that there must have been a certain sect or sects yeah. of Jews that were following this human sacrifice. And it was still going on. And all the while, it was just written in Yiddish. He didn't have a problem. But as soon as it was translated into English, he was, you know, he had his knuckles wrapped and he had to write an apology, yeah, and say he goes back on all his findings, basically. But you can read the book and you can make your own mind up. And he talks about the fact that they had these leather pouches at the time and they would dry the blood out and the blood would be kept in these leather pouches and it would be like trade. They would trade this stuff around because it was seen that this would heal people. This would heal you would be if you took this blood of a young Christian child and it was used yeah. for these magic practices. And he traces it back to these legends. These Canaanite legends of these kings, and Herod was one of them, that used to bath in the blood of infants and bathe in the blood of children. I mean, really, really sick things that went on, and that went on up to the Middle Ages. And then we've got instances, I think, right up to the beginning of the 20th century in Ukraine. There was a young lad that went missing. I think his name was Andre. And when they found him, he had all these ritualistic cuts all over his body. Him, yeah. Yeah, all these markings to do with
Kabbalah.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, these things, they still go on to this day. And there's Ted Gunderson, FBI guy, Ted Gunderson.
2,600 kids a day, he said.
Yeah, that's that go missing, isn't it? That
people can't
account for. And, you know, I think a lot of it is people won't believe it. They'll hear about Satanism and human sacrifice and people just think, well, that's too ludicrous to take place.
It's,
that doesn't take place.
Much to take in. Yeah.
And that just makes it easier for these people that are involved in it
to get away with it.
But it goes all the way back to, you know, 3,000 years ago. And longer than that, and we got people today that will think that, you know, we should be identifying with paganism, and with pagans.
Well, not only that, they talk about getting rid of the Ten Commandments. We don't need any commandments to tell us what's right and wrong. But the different degrees of people look at right and wrong, you can obviously see if there's somebody who likes sacrificing kids, he ain't going to think it's wrong.
Well, these different degrees between right and wrong, again, that's Masonic, isn't it? Sure. That's what we were saying, that they gave people the idea that good and evil were balanced against one another rather than one was wrong and the other was right. And we should seek to do away with evil. Well, I think we'll get into Carthage next time, Dennis, because we're getting near the end of the hour here. So thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, look forward to it. Yeah, good.
Yeah, it'll be good next week. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do require your donations to keep Radio Albion going, and we've got a Bitcoin wallet for that purpose. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.